Yeah, I just went ahead and hit record. We're live.
All right.
Do your thing.
All right. Welcome to No Apology with Emily and Chris. So glad you are with us. We are going to be laughing louder, digging deeper, and living larger once again on the podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, we're bringing truth to your world honestly and authentically and without apology. Some call it companion radio. What it really is a variety talk show with a Christian worldview. We try to take you deep. We try to have some fun. Hit the subscribe button. Tell your friends. It's going to be a great show today. Mike Shaw's in the building. We have Right On Way Off coming up later in the program. Also, my Salvaged by God deep dive. Mm-hmm. We're going to look at Galatians chapter 1 and talk a little bit about the authentic love of God.
Love it.
And before we get to how we always start the show,
yeah,
were we going to do those notes, letters, questions, comments
yeah,
that came in?
So.
Now, did you... Are we not going with mailbag? Because I used to always call it the mailbag.
We can't go with mailbag.
Why?
That's not even a thing anymore. Like,
well, that's
it's
how
so old school.
When
was the last time
in 2003, when we started the Chris and Emily show, mailbag was a hit.
When was the last time you even got a letter? Like, dearest Gwendolyn.
Yes.
You know?
It's been a fortnight since I've written thee. No, they come in off Facebook. They come in via email. People are reaching out, and so we bring them on the show.
Yeah, see, we get them from all over. But
we're doing that today, right?
Yes, we are doing that today. But here's the thing: it's almost all electronic. It's almost all digital.
Okay, so you don't want to call it mailbag.
So now, but when you go to freshroadmedia.com, it says right there, sound off.
Sound off.
So
okay, so we're
going to
be doing a sound off thing. Are we doing that before or after Salvaged by God?
Let's do that later.
All right,
let's do that after. So Salvaged.
It's going to be the opening segment.
Foghorn Leghorn over here.
It's going to be the opening segment, which I will announce momentarily. Then it'll be Salvaged by God deep dive. Then it'll be sound off, not mailbag. Don't ever say mailbag again.
You squeezed it in.
And then it'll be Right On Way Off with Mike Shaw. So it is the granny rant.
Yes.
And Granny from the Hillbillies, she's Beverly Hillbillies, she said, if common sense was lard, most people wouldn't be able to grease a pan. Here's our granny. It's Emily with the granny rant. Da, 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 da.
Is that my equivalent? I almost have the hairstyle going on in
You're
the glasses.
Close. You're
I do.
Close.
Today's granny rant, I want to talk about the uglification of society. And yes, that is a real word. Everyone I've said that to is like, what? Is that even a word? But to be fair, to be honest, I really didn't know that either. It's a new word that I learned. In the last several months, actually, not months. In the last several decades, there's something that's been going on that we all are noticing, and it's leaving some of us just scratching our heads. And to put it simply, we are seeing a change in our society, a visible change. Now, all you really have to do is let's just take pictures of like the movie stars of the black and white era and compare them to the movie stars of today, and there's a distinct difference.
You mean, like her?
Not talking about Granny.
Okay.
But I am talking about like the likes of Gary Cooper or Cary Grant with their tailored suits and every hair was in place. You had Grace Kelly. You had Betty Davis. And they'd walk down that red carpet in their beautiful gowns. And they looked beautiful.
Yeah.
They really did. But contrast that with today, and the red carpet really looks more like Barnum and Bailey, right?
It has changed.
It has changed. I mean, we are seeing half-naked women and men in dresses. That's what we're watching now when we turn our attention to Hollywood. But it is not limited just in that spectrum, just in those few people that sometimes we like to think of them as disconnected. They don't really know what it's like to live in the real world. But
I always wonder if part of it is apathy, where they just don't care. Like me today. I mean, I didn't think
that's
gonna be
obvious.
I didn't think it was going to be 80 degrees. I just put on my favorite Berlin Raceway sweatshirt and it's really hot. It's 80 degrees. And then I added this black and red and white sweatshirt. I decided to go with green sweatpants.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I chose to. It's because I didn't care.
I didn't realize
it until after lunch. I'm like, I'm like a walking clash thing. Why did you not help me get dressed
really
today?
It's really casual. You're really casual today.
I am
that's
uglification.
Kind of-
But you're right. It is different.
Yeah. And I don't want people to get confused because I'm not saying like, oh, the people from the black and white movies, they were the good people, and the people in the movies today, they're the bad people. This doesn't have anything to do with morality or immorality at all. It's something that we're seeing. And it was finally identified, and I finally wrapped my brain around it. My dad grew up during the Depression era. And I remember as a child, he would tell me how his mother never let him run around with a hole in his pants or in his shirt. That was repaired immediately, mm-hmm. right away. Now, they didn't have a lot, okay?
Yeah. But they still had personal pride and grooming. But
they had these standards that we were still going to look the
right
best
word.
That we can look. Fast forward to today, and we wear shredded up jeans and shredded up sweatshirts, and we walk out, you know, just styling it. And people love it now. And so there has definitely been a shift.
And it takes the pressure off if you totally blow it like I did this morning. I didn't pay attention. I just, the next sweat's on top, the next sweatshirt. And
but the thing is,
here I am.
The people with the ripped jeans and the ripped sweatshirts and stuff, like, they do care. And that's the look they're going for. You know what I mean?
Yeah. See, and I just do this naturally.
Yeah. Okay. Now, this shift that we're seeing, that's the word.
The shift.
Uglification of culture, or the uglification of society. And it's the definition of the word is it's just the process of being made ugly. Now, it sounds really simple, but there's way more to it than just a fashion statement. And it's way more sinister than what you might think. So
the uglification is sinister.
There's something sinister behind it.
Now, and you're saying it's a process.
Yeah, I'm gonna point that all out.
You're gonna lay it out
before we deep dive into this.
Okay,
I do want to make one point.
All right,
and I want you guys to carry this with you, and that is none of these things that I'm about to list are bad or wrong or evil in and of themselves. Okay. So if you're listening to the podcast and you're like, oh, wait, I have a ripped up shirt, you're fine. I'm not judging. It's not about that. It's something.
So you're not going to be Mrs. Kravitz across the street. Can you believe what those
kids are wearing?
All right. Got it.
No.
You're coming from a very loving position on this.
Right. And it's not these individual things in and of themselves, it's a cumulative. All these cumulative things all together are showing us that there's something going on that you really can't deny. And it is the uglification of our culture. Now, we talked about actors. We talked a little bit about clothing. Look at tattoos. You know, tattoos used to be relegated to like those hardened military men.
Yeah,
they might have one. And then it became much more common.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's to the point where people are tatting themselves all over, even across their face, to a point where it's covering up like who they are. Like it's harder to even recognize that person now because they have tattoos all across their face, and many of them are with the purpose or with the intent of making themselves look intimidating, look rougher and tougher. There's a purpose behind a lot of it. We also see it in our hair. Years ago, it was bows and braids and Dapper Dan wax. And everybody had this mentality of just keep your hair under control.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now it's the tussled, unkempt look that's really, really fashionable. It ekes into our art. Okay. Art used to be so amazing. You look at the greats like Monet, Da Vinci, and they were able to look at things and paint them in such a way where the beauty of even ordinary things would just strikingly stand out. And It was really, really cool. I mean, things like a pond or a haystack, all of a sudden you're just looking at it like, this is really beautiful.
And clothing too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it used to be Dress Down Fridays was like, that's so cool.
Yeah,
you know?
It was a welcome thing.
And now it's like Dress Down every day.
Well, yeah.
Do you remember when I first was in seminary and I'd have to wear a tie to go speak at churches?
Yes, I do remember that.
And you remember how I just didn't like that? And a couple times I didn't have a tie on.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, that was so outrageous.
Yes.
Now, if you wear a tie, It's outrageous.
Yeah.
Is that part of the
uglification? That's a complete shift.
Yeah,
not
it is.
Where now they're both acceptable, yeah. But now, yeah, the tie is like
I wear a tie slash suit every Easter Sunday.
You do. And you get comments, by the way.
And you look
really nice.
I got so many comments on Easter Sunday. I'm like, how big of a slob am I every other Sunday?
See, they are noticing the uglification of culture through you. So thank you.
Okay. I do what I can.
But fast forward to today.
Okay.
I mean, go through any contemporary art museum and the art is very dark.
Yes.
It's very random. It's almost confusing and it's weird. You know what I mean? It's not. Chris, you and I saw an art project where it was like this old wooden box and it had like a red ball and like a banana sitting on it or mm-hmm. something. And that was the art piece. And it's like this. What is this?
Right.
This isn't beautiful. This isn't finding something or seeing something in a new way, in any way, shape, or form. But now our art tends to even take that next step where a lot of times it's maybe geared toward a statement about political strife or something about how awful the world is now.
Yeah.
Like we see a lot more of that. We don't see as much.
The beauty of the human condition, the beauty of relationships has been replaced with the horribleness of the human condition and the horribleness of relationships. It's kind of the vibe I feel like you're talking about.
I think women are kind of at the forefront of this, not at the forefront of the movement, but at the forefront of feeling the effects of it. Because throughout history, by and large, I know that there's exceptions. But by and large, women just by default, because they were women, were looked at as a beautiful thing, a beautiful creation. But if you open up those magazines, those fashion magazines today, what do we see? We see these women who are gaunt and skinny. They almost look like they're drug addled. There's a moodiness to them, a sadness, and that's supposed to be attractive. And it's supposed to be beauty. Now, the flip side of that, you have Lizzo, who is obese, but she's promoting that as in this is the new beauty standard. Being obese is the new beauty standard. And so...
Yeah, that didn't really catch on.
No, I think so far we've been very lucky that it really hasn't.
Yeah.
It really hasn't. People haven't followed suit with that. However, you couple that with just the explosion of plastic surgery that we've seen. None of this is a realistic picture of the beauty of women.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, like Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
What about Mona Lisa was so
striking? I've never found her to be a looker.
Well,
that's just me.
That kind of makes my point. There isn't anything strikingly wow about her. I mean, she just has brown hair parted down the side. She's, you know,
I've had to sit here for a long time, Leonardo.
Maybe he captured the beauty of her anger. I don't know.
I don't know either.
The point is if you ever look at that painting in real life, you know you're looking at something extraordinarily beautiful. You really do.
Yeah.
So remember when moms used to vacuum and do the dishes in a dress? I don't know how they did that. But
yeah,
now...
you remember Wally and Beaver's mom?
Yeah, exactly.
Pearls and high heels in the kitchen. It was happening.
Exactly, they did. And now a lot of... We go to the grocery store in our pajamas. And that's no judgment because I've done that. Like, admittedly, I have done that. So it's not being judgmental.
Well, you know those Walmart videos they have?
You know, I
always look for relatives.
What are the chances?
Yeah.
Pretty good. Wait, yeah, exactly.
Or see somebody we know from the neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
Right?
And lastly, movies. Movies have really drastically changed. They've gotten a lot darker. They are strange. The stories that they tell aren't even really that uplifting anymore.
Nobody can tell a good story anymore.
And they're almost always dripping with some sort of sick, twisted behavior that's presented as normal.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Academy Awards now, you can't even be nominated for Best Picture unless you check at least two out of the five, you know.
Has to put something forward that's usually anti-biblical. Even food has gotten ugly. Chris, we've watched TV and like some fast food commercial has come on, you know, with a burger that's just like piled with fries and everything and it's just dripping and falling.
But that's not uglification.
That, Chris, both you and I have on occasion looked at some of that food on, you know, those fast food commercials mm-hmm. and went, that looks disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, yeah. Come on, you got to shoot it better than that. But I've also, on the flip side, seen many fast food commercials, and at 9 o'clock tonight, I'm like, well, tomorrow I'm off the diet.
Hey,
so,
yeah, they know their audience, that's for sure,
that's
right?
Right?
Okay,
that's
well, something obviously is horribly wrong.
Did you hear
when
KFC came out with a chicken pizza? It's amazing. I've not had it yet.
I thought that was going to be like a one-liner. I was expecting a punchline after that.
It's a chicken. I don't know. I got to try it, though.
A chicken pizza. Is that chicken made with chicken? Is that a pizza made with chicken?
Made
or is
with
it
chicken.
A pizza to feed the chickens?
No. I doubt it. I don't.
Anyway, that summarizes the uglification of our culture. But here's what's really interesting, because I looked into it. And honestly, there was a meme that I saw that kind of sparked my interest. And I'm like, this guy, I think, is onto something. Chris, and I gave you that meme, if you want to throw that up there.
There you go.
And it's just a guy. He's at like a sporting event or something. But of course, there's piercings and tattoos. And the people even like black out their teeth and put drill them out and put other stuff in their teeth and so on. Anyway, it says this, because this is what tripped my trigger. This is what made me go down this rabbit hole. It says, the uglification of everything is a very effective psychological demoralization tactic used to weaken an enemy without them knowing. When you make everything ugly and confusing, you can remove a human's ability to resist their takeover and even remove their will to live.
Oh, interesting.
Look at our architecture. Look at the media, what media glorifies. Look at our movies. Uglification, demoralization is upon us. I don't know who it is that said that or wrote that, but that's what tripped my trigger. And
his name's Jason, but we don't know him. So.
There's got to be more to this, because it's infiltrating every single aspect of our life. So I did look into it, and he was absolutely right. It is a tactic, and they actually use it in war. One of the easiest ways that you can see it is if you go into like World War II pictures and you look at people that were in captivity, what did they do to those prisoners of war? They would oftentimes shave their head or cut their hair just awfully and awful short. They would give them uniforms or clothing that was very drab. Everybody's was the same, so you couldn't really tell what you were looking at as far as a man or a woman or anything like that. And it made the people look ugly. And they did that on purpose. They absolutely did that on purpose, because it was made to make the people put in that situation feel less valuable, feel less human, feel less beautiful. You feel less. And so.
So when you get, when, you know, there's times we're going to go out, I will use the phrase, and I have since we were, you know, young kids when we first got married.
Yeah.
Are you going to put your pretty on today?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so when you put your pretty on, do you feel better?
You do. I mean, you've heard people say,
I don't know what that would be like.
The man, you know, the suit makes the man or whatever. Yeah. I mean, it does have a psychological thing to it.
Well,
okay?
For me, I feel like it used to.
Yeah.
You know, we had a phrase, and I used to have to wear, we called them the Pat Rileys. Pat
yes.
Riley, if you don't know, was the dapper basketball coach for the LA Lakers, and then the Miami Heat. But back in the Laker days, that's what we said in the neighborhood. We put on our Pat Rileys. And so when you put them on and you'd go to work, or you'd be in the boardroom, you know, doing corporate training that I used to do, or sales or whatever, there were times where it might make you feel good, but a lot of times it was more uncomfortable.
Yeah, true.
You know, much more comfortable to be in a hoodie and sweats and doing the same kind of thing.
True. But when
and
it's
so,
on, yeah.
I don't know if that's part of uglification or if that's just being uncomfortable because my neck got thick and I felt like I was being squeezed to death by a really weak guy.
There, it's definitely a time to be comfortable. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we would come home from work if you had to dress up for work, and what did you do? You kicked off your shoes, you loosened that tie, you threw off your jacket. So there's definitely a time to be comfortable. There's no doubt about that.
It almost makes you stiff, but yet you felt like you were more professional.
Exactly. You accomplished something. It gave you kind of confidence. You know, there's nothing worse than, okay, I have to give a presentation and, oh, I spilled coffee down the front of me. Like, everything goes through your head, you know, like, what are they going to think of me? I can't even control my coffee. How am I supposed to lead them in this, you know, presentation? Yeah. Stuff like
well,
that.
Let me tell you from experience after about five or six of those events, you get used to it and it doesn't bother you anymore. I have preached with dog prints on my shirt, paw prints on my shirt.
Yeah, but you were in rural America, so it was okay. Anyway, so if you can make people feel less lovely, make them feel less valuable, less like a human, it tends to make it easier for them to just give up. And to yield and give up the fight, so to speak.
So you're saying it's a psychological tactic.
It's a psychological tactic to break your enemy down. But it also has another effect on the people who are holding them captive. If you can make them ugly, you make them less human. You make them less appealing. You make them less valuable. And it's easier then to mistreat them and abuse them or harm them, because your mind gets conditioned that they're less than human, and it removes that moral conflict within you if you have an inkling of, ooh, I don't want to hurt somebody because they're a human being. You know what I mean? So it is. It's a war tactic, but it can also be used on society. And that's what I really think is at the heart of all this stuff. They can use the psychological tactic.
When you say they using this, who is they and what are they using?
People who are in very influential positions or in high power
positions. So you believe this is part of the destruction of our culture that's been planned?
Yeah, I believe that Hollywood very intentionally puts that imagery out there for us. I really do.
Well, we can testify from feet on the ground in Hollywood that, you know, the evil then is leading the show.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people behind the scenes and behind things that maybe you don't know who they are, but they're making decisions that really do lead us down the path of not caring, having a little more apathy. It doesn't really matter. And once you start going down that road, it is easier for you, like I said before, to give up the fight, to not really care. Is it really that big of a deal?
But what about the other side of the coin, though, Emily, where, you know, you want to be accepting and you don't want to, you know, make major things out of minor things. And a lot of times, you know, that's minor. And, you know, I mean, there was a church that wanted to talk to me when I was a free agent. And I just kind of eliminated them because they said I had to wear khakis and a button-down shirt, except for Fridays. I had to wear basically a suit and tie all week, but on Fridays I could wear khakis.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not the right guy for you.
Right. And that's where it gets back to...
So does that make me part of the uglification, demonic push?
Well, not specifically that, but...
Other things. Not just that.
No, I'm just kidding. No, like I said, it's not each of these things as an individual thing.
Yeah.
Okay, it's cumulatively where our society as a culture is going. And you take one more step and all of a sudden they will tell you that the cultural standards of acceptability or beauty are from white supremacy. They're from people who are transphobic, fatphobic, all these things, slapping labels on swaths of people.
Yeah, you're always
like
a phobic.
Satan likes to do. But that's what's going on.
So are you uglification phobic then? You know,
no.
And the they that you're talking about, the they you're talking about is what is like a demonic
There you go.
Current.
Bing, bing, bing. Yeah.
And so you have a godly current, you have a demonic current. We don't fight against flesh and blood. So you're saying the demonic current has been to uglify. That's the they.
Yes.
And in that demonic current, of course, destruction is the goal, even though we don't think so. So now the weirder you are. I mean, I remember just recently there was a race in Austin, Texas, and they, you know, they had a grand marshal do the, you know, drivers start their engines.
Yeah.
And he started out with Austin. Let's stay weird. Austin is just trying to be one of the weirdest cities on the planet.
Why?
I don't know.
I know.
Uglification is what I'm coming to. I mean, you're making sense to me now.
Uglification. And so, it's the people who are colonizers. It's the racists. It's all these other people that make me feel ugly or bad or low self-esteem. Okay, so it's just an attempt.
Then you're saying that makes us want to not resist things.
It makes us not want to resist things. It caused division in culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's they, we again, right? But it's the people, you have people who, for whatever reason, they don't feel good about themselves, they don't like the way they look, or they feel bad about themselves. They're able then to look and say, well, it's those people that told me that I might have to do things that I don't want to do just because it's the right thing to do. Those people are making me feel bad. They're making me feel ugly. They're making me feel whatever. Lizzo is a prime example. You know, this is the new beauty standard. This is the new beauty standard. What are they not telling you? They're not telling you that she's probably in pain every day. They're not telling you that her doctors are probably pleading with her, stop, don't do this, turn around, this isn't healthy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I thought Lizzo herself was saying, I'm prettier than you.
Yeah,
y'all.
It is. She's a part of it. Okay. She would be a part of it. She's bought into that lie. And the lie is, let's just not call what's really ugly, ugly anymore. Because it doesn't matter. Whatever you are, if you're way overweight, if you're way underweight, if you're this, that, or the other thing, it doesn't matter. You're beautiful just the way you are. Just the way you are. Don't change. But that's not healthy. And their solution.
I kind of like that idea on some levels. You know, we've got to try to accept people where they are. We got to love them the way that they are. Jesus loved us like while we were in sinners.
We don't hate them now. But don't you see what I'm saying? They're saying, let's not call what's ugly, ugly anymore. And it's to the detriment of human beings.
Yeah, see, you can say that. But I've been taking this the whole time that you've been teaching this or explaining this, is that they're trying to make things even more and more ugly.
Making ugly acceptable.
Well, yeah, but not in the acceptable that we're going to love our neighbor as ourselves. And, you know, we're all sinners and in need of a savior.
Right.
You know, so technically we're all kind of ugly. You know what I mean?
Yes.
In our own, you know.
Yes. But
yeah.
If you
everybody buys deodorant for a reason.
Yeah.
Okay. Every human being.
I mean, if you had a relative who was anorexic, you would say something to them.
Yeah.
You would do everything in your power to say, honey, I know you look in the mirror and you want to be thinner and thinner and thinner, but it's not pretty.
Yeah, the internal beauty we try to express.
This is ugly. Don't do this. Okay. This is what I'm getting at. Okay, very good. So it's like telling someone who's clinically depressed, just don't be depressed. You know, to tell someone, just don't feel ugly anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, that's not even a solution.
I got into an argument with somebody at an airport.
Yeah.
Because their face, this was when face tattoos first came out.
Yes.
The face was all tatted up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just looking at it like, what is that on the side of this guy's face? Mm-hmm. He's like, what are you looking at? I said, well, I'm looking at your face. Didn't you do that so that people like me would look at it? You know, and he wasn't prepared for me to be aggressive back, you know?
Right, to say
and, you know, so then
something.
He's standing up and I'm like, dude, we don't have to throw down over this. I didn't understand what that was. I was trying to figure that out.
It was new, yeah.
And so we literally are going back and forth and it went from escalation down to just a conversation. And I'm like, if you're going to tattoo your face, this is before Mike Tyson did his thing.
Right, right.
And I said, if you're going to put tattoos on your face, people like me are going to look at it.
Yeah.
Some might even be bold like me and question it.
Right.
So.
Yeah, when I see people who are very, went to great extent to cover up what they really look like, I always wonder, like, what's going on? How did you get to that point where you felt like you needed to obstruct our view of your face?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And so but what about women who, when they don't wear makeup? Like that one time you went to the mall with me and somebody took a picture of you and put it on Facebook. You're so brave. You're so brave. And then we kept saying, you know,
not a compliment. That's not a compliment to say you're brave because you showed your face.
I'm not wearing makeup. I'm standing up against uglification.
Uglification. Right. I am just the Mona Lisa. Let's just put
I want to back you up to white supremacist, misogynist, racist.
Yeah.
What is going on there as far as uglification? What's your point there that if we say something's not.
As we move
so,
down
in other words,
road,
everything is pretty. And if you say anything's ugly, even though we're making it as ugly as possible, then you have a problem.
Well,
and we're making it as ugly as possible so that you'll have less resistance. You just will become apathetic.
Right, exactly.
I get it now.
You ever go up to somebody who's all tatted up and say anything to them? No, never.
Well,
but here's
I did
the thing.
More than once.
But. Well, but here's the thing. A lot of times those things are cries for help. I mean,
sometimes.
They just are.
Sometimes.
You know? And I'm, again, if you have a tattoo, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about extreme, cumulative, over the top, and now you can't say anything path that our culture's going down. Keep that in mind. None of these things in and of themselves are bad or wrong, as I said.
You're talking about the demonic current that comes from Hollywood versus the righteous current that comes from the Christian worldview.
Exactly.
In general terms, uglification is a way to get people to be more apathetic.
Don't say anything. Back down. Don't resist. Don't say anything.
And I'm sure shame then falls away.
Exactly. See, you can tell anybody, I'm going to just wrap it up here really quick. You can tell someone who is living in a dark, bad, sinful life. You can say to them, don't feel bad about that. Don't feel bad. But guess what? They can't. They can't not feel bad because people have consciences.
Mm-hmm.
People have feelings. And the reality is that things that you do, things that I do, will make me feel a lot of different things. And sometimes it's ashamed, or sometimes it's, I just feel like I have let people down, probably because I have. You know what I mean?
No,
you can't just tell someone, don't feel that way anymore. It's
right.
Going to keep hounding them no matter what you try to do.
Shonda Pierce, Laughing in the Dark. I recommend that to anybody that's dealing with depression.
Yeah.
Here's literally the godmother of Christian comedy, Shonda mm-hmm. Pierce, was fighting depression, and Christians were telling her, well, if you just love Jesus more, you'd pull yourself
just
out.
Pray.
And it's like, no, she needed some medicine and some help.
Right. Sometimes that's the case, because we recognize something was wrong.
She can make thousands of people laugh night after night after night and go back to the hotel room depressed. Laughing in the Dark. Shonda Pierce, look it up. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. So number one, we all need a place to take our hurt, our shame, our guilt. We were not created as human beings to carry that around day after day after day after day. Number two, Jesus is that place. Not only is he that place, but he's the only place that you can go and completely get rid of it. Because he says, cast all your cares on me. I care for you. We can do that. All of it. The hurt, the ugly, the everything. And then lastly, we get that's not the end of it. We get to make a great exchange. And as we give him our guilt and our shame and our detrimental behavior, he then in turn gives us his peace, his life, his righteousness. So if you don't turn to Christ, you will be forced to continue to carry whatever it is that you're carrying around. You can try to put it on someone else and say, oh, it's a certain race of people that make me feel this way. It's a certain political party that makes me feel this way. You can try, but that shadow, that cloud will just come right back, because you can't. It's something inside of you that you cannot unburden onto someone else other than Jesus Christ. So here's the good news. Once you give it to the Lord Jesus Christ, he washes you, he unburdens you, and he sets you on the path that you ought to be on, the path that you were meant to go on. And when you get there, then you're able to start letting go of those ugly things and acknowledge, yeah, that was an ugly part of me. That was an ugly time in my life. That was an ugly thing I did. That was an ugly way of thinking. And we can let it all go. And when we let it all go, then we can do what Paul tells us when he writes to the Philippians in chapter 4, verse 6, where he says, finally, dear brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is lovely, whatever is, I don't even know all the words, noble,
right, pure, noble
and admirable.
Lovely.
Yeah, and he just goes on and on and on. He says, think about these things. Some translations say, dwell on these things. Focus on these things. Look hard and long on the things that are lovely and true and noble. So letting go, acknowledging, and then letting go of what is truly ugly is really the most beautiful thing that you can do, right?
Well, and I also want to add that fashion, tattoos, hairstyles, That's not what you're not what you're talking about.
No.
I know some people with some funky hairstyles and some really
tattoos
that are very attractive.
Mm-hmm.
They're not part of the uglification of. But what we're talking about is, like, for example, let's just take movies, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Movies have gotten so ugly because nobody knows how to tell a story,
right?
At least in especially endings.
Mm-hmm.
I how many times have we been watching a really good story and we get to that climactic turn and as we're bringing it home, they don't know how to wrap up the story?
How many series?
They don't have the emotional depth to even connect with an audience. They're just so shallow.
Yeah. Or we've quit halfway through. Like, enough of this
garbage.
Yeah,
that happens a lot too. Anyway.
I mean, true. So let's turn to Romans chapter 6, verse 6. I love this verse, and this will be the end of it. We know that our old selves were crucified with Christ so that sin might lose its power in our lives. We are no longer slaves to sin. In other words, sin no longer allures us. It has no more appeal. We begin to love what is really, truly beautiful again. So don't fall for the uglification of society, which is coming on us. Remember that even though it gets darker and darker and darker and darker and darker, we can still focus on all those things that are good, true, lovely, noble, yada, yada, yada. So
nice.
That's it. Are you seeing it? Are you seeing the uglification of our culture?
Yeah.
It's very different.
I'm part of it, you know?
Me too.
I mean, because I don't want to, you know, I like wearing the hoodies. I like being the sweatpants
being comfortable.
Pastor.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I just wish they matched.
I used to wear a dress every day to school.
Yeah.
And then when it was gym day, I had to wear shorts underneath my dress. You know what I mean? And that's gone and that's fine. But things have drastically changed. And I don't really see it turning around. I think we just kind of keep falling further and further.
I think
into weirdness.
When you get back to the demonic current, when we talk about that,
mm-hmm.
I think people understand what you're talking about. Let me give you an example in the automobile industry.
Mm-hmm.
If you have someone, say, in you know, Compton, California, that paints their vehicle in a certain way, uses certain rims, certain lift kits.
Okay.
To some people, that might look just horrendous and ugly.
Right.
But to a lot of folks, that's art.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. Right. That's beauty. That's automotive beauty right there.
Right.
And so we call it eye of the beholder.
True.
You know, and
yes.
I mean, even paint schemes on race cars. Sometimes it's like, oh, what are they thinking? And so you're not talking about eye of the beholder stuff.
No.
You're talking about when we basically create this whole uglification of
when we just want to make it as weird and as ununderstandable and as not real. I mean, the biggest thing is with women, they're not even real anymore. And I wish we could go back to where, oh my goodness, people that look like women that look like Mona Lisa were just the cat's pajamas. You know what I mean? Just being ourselves.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
being ourselves. And men too.
Well,
men
I think
too.
The other bigger point from your uglification granny rant was the fact that it is made to get us to be apathetic so that we can be conquered easily.
There is a psychological
thing behind
it. That's
part of the Satan's plan in any society.
It really is. So keep that in mind. I learned something new, and I hope you guys learned something new as well. All right, let's take a turn here. Let's go to Salvaged by God Deep Dive with... I want to do the Chris Danielson, Pastor Chris Danielson.
Hey, wherever you get content, you can search Salvaged by God, and on YouTube and Rumble, you can actually see we have a little camera set up in our sanctuary, and these are basically my sermons, my messages, the sharing of the Word of God, preaching the Word of God, whatever, however you want to call it. And so last Sunday, I did a thing on the authentic Word of God. And what we wanted with the authentic Word of God was I wanted to lay out some outlines of what it means to have the love of God, because people want to take God's love now and they want to twist it into something that it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a couple different outlines I found out there and I massaged them. One of them was mine, and then one was from another pastor friend of mine who had kind of outlined these things. And these outlines, I kind of put them together with the idea that if you've really studied the scripture references, and I had like 25 scripture references with, if you went back and went down through there.
I haven't finished that yet.
You would have this vision and this feeling and this vibe and this understanding of what God's authentic love is. Mm-hmm. And I made the point that it manifests itself in one area hugely in an incredible way, and that's the cross. Mm. And at the cross, God's love was demonstrated for us. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get people to understand false teaching and deception.
Mm-hmm.
Because we live in a false time right now where, well, if God loves, then you have to love. And God wouldn't judge, so you can't judge. And so that live and let live is part of how uglification came to be.
Yeah.
Because there's a big part of me that's like, yeah, I don't care if somebody has tattoos. I don't care if, you know, they have a gauge in their ear or whatever. But what you're talking about is you know, I keep calling it the demonic current. You know, it's a bigger agenda.
There's a bigger picture going on, yeah.
And I believe the same thing is with false teaching and with deception.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we go to Galatians chapter 6, that's where I'm going to go for the scripture portion of today, because it wasn't part of my messages. But it starts in verse 6. It says, I'm amazed that you are so quickly turning away from him who called you by the grace of Christ and are turning to a different gospel.
Yeah.
That's what we're seeing. And we're not just seeing it in fringe groups now. We're seeing it in mainstream denominations. We're seeing it in teachers that used to be sound that are now false teachers. What happens, what happens when your favorite teacher is exposed as being a flat-out false teacher? I.e., they've disqualified themselves.
Yeah.
Once that happens and now they're teaching a gospel that's different, can you eradicate them from your life, or do you need to hold on to them because of the historical significance of what they've been doing?
Okay.
I'll give you an example. Dr. Michael Brown. Mm-hmm. Dr. Michael Brown is a friend of ours. He was in the movie Bible Idiots. After the movie came out, we went to Concord, North Carolina, and went to his offices with him and his staff and screened the movie together. We followed him. I bought one of his books just 2 years ago, and he signed me a note in it and sent it to me. He's one of those guys who leans on the charismatic side, but he always was fair.
Right.
He always was fair. And now he has aligned himself with some charismatics who are false teachers. That's what they are. Mm-hmm. And he will not speak out against them. But just 3 years ago, Michael Brown was the guy who said, if you prophesied that Trump would be in the White House, you need to apologize. And, you know, he was calling out some of his charismatic buddies. That's why we always liked him, because he was honest. He was fair. And now he's turning from that. So how long do we hold on to Michael Brown before we say he's disqualified himself, we got to cut him loose? That's what I'm talking about, is that there are so many. Ravi Zacharias is another one. You know, Ravi Zacharias never taught anything in error that I can think of, but it turned out his life was seriously in error. We can't come on the show and quote Ravi Zacharias now because his credibility is completely gone. Because he disqualified himself.
Mm-hmm.
He disqualified himself because of his behavior. Now, I've got the book Beyond Opinion still in my office, and I might refer to it because the teaching was still sound. But Ravi has now disqualified himself, so we have to move on away from him. So many people out there have been with these teachers for, you know, 5 years, 50 years, whatever. They find out that they're false teachers, they're exposed as false teachers, and they still hold on to them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was still some good in there.
Yeah.
Anyway, Galatians chapter 1 blows that out of the water.
All right, what does it say?
It says, not that there is another gospel, but there are some who are troubling you and want to distort the gospel of Christ. But even if we or an angel from heaven should preach to you a gospel contrary to what we have preached to you, a curse be on him.
Mm-hmm.
And then verse 9 says, and as we have said before, and now I say again, if anyone is preaching you a gospel contrary to what you received, a curse be on him.
That's strong language.
That word curse, I looked it up earlier today. It's one of the most harshest words, and it means damned.
Yeah.
It means if this person's in your midst, you grab them by the collar and you kick them in the backside straight out the door and you don't apologize.
Yeah.
That's what we're supposed to do. That's what we're supposed to do if we hear a gospel different, even if it's an angel.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a gospel different than what the Bible teaches and what we've heard. Right. That the love of God, the authentic love of God, is at the cross. It's not leaving people in their sins.
Yeah, because you know what? False Christs are ugly.
In verse 10, Paul asks the question, am I now trying to persuade people or God?
Right.
Or am I striving to please people? Are we really people pleasers?
Mm.
You know,
I haven't noticed I've pleased too many people.
If I were still trying to please people, I would not be a servant of Christ.
There you go.
That's what Paul says. Yeah. And that is my salvage by God deep dive.
All right.
Today,
very good. I love that. That's good. You actually took what your sermon was and you even built on that. Took us even deeper on that. I love that.
I mean, you can go deeper in like five different ways. How can I love my family better? How can I be better at church? How can I be better in the community? How can I be better on the job? And how can you be better with the gospel truth you've been given?
Yeah.
And can you spot deceptions and false teachers?
Yeah. Well, one of the ways that
there's so much out there. Let's just get along to get along. And we don't want to be obstinate. We don't want to be the rage against the machine. Oh, that Chris Danielson, he's abrasive. You know.
You are prickly at times.
Well, I want to end with this.
Okay.
I want to write a new book.
All right.
And here's the cover. Yeah.
Everybody is wrong but me.
Everybody is wrong but me, a beginner's guide to arguing theology on the internet.
That is a great subtitle.
Yeah, yeah.
I appreciate
that. I saw
that
online and I thought I've got to end with that because that's kind of what it is.
Yeah.
Here's the way I take it.
Okay.
Everybody is wrong except for Jesus.
Okay? Well, that's a good take.
And
yeah,
the
like
Bible,
that.
The closed canon of scripture, sola scriptura. That is the prophets have prophesied, the teachers have taught, the apostles have apostolized, and here we are. And so in that world, if it lays down next to scripture, we can deal with it. If it doesn't, we can't. And not taking scripture out of context is a key.
Yeah.
And so you've got to be humble and you can't think yourself always right. But when you know the gospel, Paul says anything that tries to tell you otherwise, it's cursed. Get it out of your life.
Exactly. So, the fact that I can say sola scriptura, does that make me bilingual?
No.
I was hoping. I was wishing upon a star. Well, I do want to bring Mike in here really quick because there's some important stuff that I want to talk about. But one of the ways that we do help one another along in our understanding is the old iron sharpens iron. So when people have questions or people start dialoguing, it gets us thinking about, okay, what do we really believe? And where are the scriptures? What do the scriptures actually say? So I love that when people have that open, honest dialogue. Speaking of which, we had a few comments come in.
Are we bringing Mike in?
And what do you want to do? Do you want to bring him in for the comments?
Whatever.
Let's do it.
There he is.
Then.
Hi, Mike.
Oh, hi. How are you? I was in the green room.
What were your thoughts on uglification and deception, false teachers?
Oh, let me see if I can tie it together. Put in a nice little bow.
Yeah, do it.
So I loved what you said yesterday during the sermon about how we get God on the inside, right? Through his spirit. And then he changes us from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
And so we bring, whatever the culture that has uglified us because we had our sin nature and we heaped our own sin on that.
Yeah.
And the culture encouraged us. And so we were ugly. Mm-hmm. And then God changes us from the inside out once we receive his spirit.
Yeah.
That's the answer to uglification.
Yeah, uglification.
Now, in the natural, Saturday, I met this guy named Henry and he's wearing cord pants. He's wearing these cords. He's like 20. He's like 23 years old. I'm like, dude, I had a pair of those in junior high.
Yeah.
Are they coming back? He's like, well, I don't know, but I got them at a thrift store or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to the thrift store, man. I'm going to look for some cords.
They always get bigger and bigger as the day goes on.
I'm telling
you. And like you put them on, they feel really nice. And at the end of the day, they're just like loosey-goosey.
What I can't stand is when you walk down the hallway.
Tweet, tweet, tweet.
Let me tell you what's never coming back. Cords might come back, but will never come back. Will be the leisure suits with the collars that stick out past.
Yeah, no, we can't. We don't want that. That was never. That was uglification back then. You remember you had to dress up to get on a jet, to fly somewhere?
That's true. Yeah.
But and my parents smoked, so we sat in the back in the smoking section, rows 25 on back.
Right.
Because there was an invisible barrier at row 25. Right. That smoke never got further to the...
I know.
Yeah,
it was like COVID,
Oh, yeah.
It only goes so far.
Yeah.
Well, let me share another little uglification thing for you.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. This right here. Is just a little piece of paper I printed, and I just stuck it on the flag. It's called a flag.
I know. Yeah.
It's so ugly.
It's beautiful.
But I have apathy. I don't care. You know, it's like,
look at how straight those lines are. It's great.
It's great.
No, but the point is that yes. you would want something more professionally done and hung correctly
Once we have all of the things in line.
And we don't. And what I'm saying is there's a holy apathy to some of this stuff. And what Emily's talking about is tipping the boat the other way too far.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
What I don't want is somebody to hear this show and say, Emily said everybody with tattoos and weird hair is just, they're uglified. Mm-mm. It's like, that's not what she was saying.
Not at all.
But like I say, you want to put your best foot forward. And for this show, for our resources, this is it.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Well, you could
at
least
get ugly all you want.
Take it or leave it.
I'm standing by it.
We don't have it in the budget to have it at least laminated.
Yeah.
Do we have a lamination?
Good question. It's no Mona Lisa, but it'll do. It'll do, donkey.
So I'm preaching at a Baptist church at the end of the month.
Yeah.
And they told me that they've never seen him preach in jeans. And I'm like, oh no, what am I going to do? That's all I have. It's jeans. So I'm thinking the thrift store, I'll preach in cords. Is
there
that better?
You go.
That
yes. work?
Well, now that you brought it up, I say go full leisure suits.
Oh, yeah.
They get pictures.
Yeah. Do what they do in Hollywood. Just don a dress there, Mike.
Yeah.
Should be dancing.
Yeah. Yeah. So right. Are we doing sound off or mailbag or what did we?
We're doing a lot of things. We're going to do mailbag first, if that's okay.
Are you going to call it mailbag?
The electronic mailbag?
No, I hate myself so bad.
The inbox?
Can we call it the inbox? Uglification. How about Emily?
It doesn't matter what happens with this show for the rest of the time because I just won. I just won.
Wow.
Because she's like, we should never call it mailbag. And then she goes, are we going to do mailbag?
She did. She did do that. It's an old habit from back in the day.
On
time
the website,
to sound
if,
off.
If you go to freshroadmedia.com, you can actually click on a button that says sound off.
Right.
Leave a voice message through your computer speakers, and we might use it on the show in the future, or we might transcribe it. Depends on the connection that you have. But sound off is what Emily wants to do when people reach out to the
show.
Exactly. Yeah, this is Bob and Bastin.
So, I have three of them, and they kind of came to us over time a little bit. So
when we did the mailbag bit back in the day,
not the sound off. Yes.
No, when we did it when it was called mailbag back in the day.
Sound off, formerly known as mailbag.
You would gather some, and I would gather some. One of us had the lead on it. We knew it the day before. Mm-hmm. The other was not told what was happening. It was just we wanted a spontaneity reaction. I know what these three are.
But
so
I know.
Just so that we're all clear, I don't know what the. Normally, we do the spontaneity thing. Today, I know what the questions are.
All right.
I've followed the statements.
Full disclosure.
All right. Here's the first one. And the first one is directed to you, Chris. He says, I used to listen to you when you were in Arizona, found you by accident about a month ago. It's a guy. I raised my kids, taking them to school, listening to the Rush Hour Riddle and all the other fun nonsense. That we always brought, but we always brought it back to the Bible. Glad I found you again. That's from Jonathan from Mesa, Arizona.
Yeah. Sweet.
So, yeah.
Well, great. Thank you, Jonathan. I'm so glad that you found us again. Thank you for subscribing. I think he subscribed to the Rumble page, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. All right.
But whether it's YouTube or Rumble, please subscribe, follow, or whatever it is on any of the audio channels, Spotify. By the way, if you started listening on Spotify to No Apology with Emily, and January rolled around and you're like, we haven't gotten any new content. It's because you got to unfollow and then refollow again. It's a long story with Spotify, iTunes, wherever you've got it. Mm-hmm. Tell somebody. I'm so glad that Jonathan found us again from our audience from way back in Arizona.
Yeah.
And we're just, again, we're a variety talk show with a Christian worldview. Want to have some fun, want to dig deeper, want to lay some stuff out. So thank you for finding us, Jonathan.
Yes. Help people not to just stumble upon us.
Yeah.
Tell them all about it. Okay. Next one, both Emily and Chris. What happened that would take you to Iowa was the first question. I thought you were from Minnesota. I remember you being in Michigan and thought you left to make movies. What am I missing here? Sheila Ann, she's from Hudsonville, Michigan.
Yeah, nice.
I remember Hudsonville.
Yeah, I answered that one typing.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, but just using the question on the air.
Yeah. What happened?
What happened to you guys?
Emily decided to uglify me, and then that happened. No. So let me ask you this. Okay. Yes, we left Michigan to go make movies in Alabama. And when COVID hit, it was actually right before COVID hit, I really felt God speaking to me that it was now time to pastor a church. And where did I want to go? Would I go, you know, we used to say Albuquerque to Zimbabwe and anywhere in between. You know, just wherever God would send us, we'd want to go. That was Emily and I's heart. It really was. But what do you do when you've, you know, what happens after you've had the ride of your life? You know, so many times people say, well, we just want to go out and have the ride of our life. That's great. We did that. Now what happens? What happens after?
Yeah.
And
the
so
the ride's over.
Yeah.
And we're tired.
You look at the pictures that you pay $20 for going down the roller coaster.
There you go.
Yeah, this was the picture during the ride of our life. That was the one that was on billboards. Nice. And now that's us at Easter Sunday.
Not so much a billboard.
No.
That's a couple weeks ago.
We wouldn't put that up there.
Yeah, I think there's a word for it. I think it's
well, that's Chris's suit.
Uglification.
It's the aging process.
Yeah. Yes. No, so... the reality is that we asked God to take us to rural America, and here's what our goal was. Our goal was, can we find people, Christian people, that are authentic in their faith? They love Jesus more than they love themselves, and that they're not afraid. They're not afraid. They're not going to bend the knee to the culture because they're worried about what somebody's going to say or think about them. And in rural America and in a smaller town, I think he had a better shot for that.
Yeah.
Well, I met some guys from Harlan, Iowa that were the leadership team of the Fresh Encounter Church, and I just felt like, you know, there was a strong contingent here that had what we were looking for. And so for those of you who don't know, I've been a pastor, went to seminary in the 90s. I've been a pastor in half a dozen different churches, interim guy. I was even a Yankee in rural Alabama. You know, that's not going to work out.
It did for a while.
It was like a 12-month deal. I did it for like 15 months. And yeah. I mean, the Woodstock was Easter Sunday. We had 33 people. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, normally it was 15 to 20 people every Sunday. Yeah. Well, that was great training ground for what God had planned for us. But so that's how we ended up in Iowa. Was really, to be honest with you, God picked this place for us. And we will make movies. We'll keep doing broadcasting just like we're doing right now.
You did make two movies, actually.
Yeah. And
Idiots, the movie, and Colors of Character, the movie.
Those were two full-length documentaries. Done. Colors went to the theaters. But I also made about, 20, 30 other little smaller projects to help keep the lights on.
Yeah,
it was a great run. And so what do you do when the ride of your life is kind of over and you're not wanting to retire and go to the beach and... because you can't afford it, that'd be the key. What do? We ask God what's next. And sometimes God will take you on a journey that you're not expecting. Mm-hmm. And ours happened to be here in Harlan, Iowa, so I'm excited about it.
God definitely moved us here, and it's been glorious, because when you're in the center of God's will, life is really good. It can get really hard, but it's still really good.
And Mike, you followed us here a year later.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, excited. That was total crazy how God sent you here.
The whole story is, you know, too long to tell, but it really was the end of a chapter, me going back to West Texas and everything with my mom, and that's a longer story. And me coming here was the end of that chapter and the beginning of something new here. And I love it here. I'm having so much fun. I've met so many great people. And in the Midwest winter, we had 3 weeks of really great snow and cold.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in for the first time, finding the show or refinding the show, Mike was our news director when we were the morning show in Arizona. Yeah. And then we had an internet radio station for a while. We hired Mike to be our news director there. But Mike, so you've been around on and off with us for years.
Yeah, right.
What would you say about the authentic faith found in Fresh Encounter Church?
Oh, yeah.
As you're one of our top volunteers now, too. I mean, you do a lot of the audio video stuff. Isn't that part of what got you so excited, is how awesome some of these Christians are here?
Well, yeah. So that's what I was talking about. I'm just having so much fun, and I've met so many great people. And
us too. That's how
almost all of my friends are
privileged to pastor.
Are the church family here.
Yeah, it's a privilege.
And then, you know, a small town, I'm getting to know lots of people. I'm getting involved in lots of different things because that's just what I like to do. Mm-hmm. And so I'm getting plugged in here and getting plugged in there.
Yeah.
And getting to know the whole town. And it's a hoot nanny.
Yeah, it really is. And it's kind of a unique situation, too, where like we'll have the women's Bible study. And we have a few women who don't even go to this church, but they go to another church. But they come to this one because they have friends or they have family and vice versa. You know, so the church people will kind of, you know, float back and forth because they know one another. And it's really a great thing. I love that. I love those familial small town ties.
Wherever you're listening across the world or across the country, we want you to have that same thing with your local church. Your local church needs you. Get involved. You know, plant your seed there. Be there with your volunteer time. It's needed for such a time as this. be strong, my Christian brothers and sisters, right. And that starts in your local church. Is that it, or?
You know, there's one more.
One more.
Chris, all right, keep this concise, okay? We got a lot more to talk about. This actually came via Facebook. Says, really love seeing Emily in the lead of the show, and I concur. Thank you very much.
I concur as well.
So you're a pastor now? Question mark.
There it is.
Who, how, and what allowed for that mistake?
Oh,
let's have coffee if you get back to Grand Rapids. He says GR anytime soon. That's Doug from Coopersville, Michigan.
Yeah, race
obviously
track guy.
Someone who knows you.
Yeah,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was the Christian guy on the air, and I was a seminary trained guy before that. And I did a lot of stuff in a lot of churches around Michigan. Mm-hmm. He just didn't know me from that. He knew me as the vice president of Berlin Raceway, mm-hmm. knew me as the track announcer,
right, right.
as the guy on TV all the time and helping people get sponsorship. And so it goes to show you that not everybody knows your story.
Right.
Not everybody knows your last failure, nor do they know your next success. And here's the other thing. Most people don't care.
Right.
They just don't care. They're trying to make it themselves. So that's why we have grace for others. But the fact that he found it ironic that I am now a pastor makes me kind of wonder, like, yeah, I mean, did he not know?
He's picking on you a little bit there, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was just a little tongue-in-cheek. But,
yeah.
But what my takeaway was...
Your little sign there does say salvaged.
That's right. That's right.
It's like, who let that out?
Well, what it means is that we won't impact people that we don't know in different ways.
That's true.
And so, you know...
Yep. Facts.
If I can be a pastor, you can serve Jesus with what he's calling
there
you
go.
To do. So
nobody
really,
has an excuse anymore.
Really suck it up and look hard at it.
Yeah.
All right.
I would say that's my spiritual gift, you know, as an example of what not to do.
I kind of answered that question with the second answer a little bit too. So I think I'm done.
All right. So thank you again. Anybody that wants to throw a question out there, make a comment, you certainly can. Go to freshroadmedia.com. And just click on the sound off square, or you can send an email directly to me, Emily, EMILEE at freshroadmedia.com. Is it org or
com?
I haven't said that out loud in a while. Okay, sorry about that. And I have it on my paper too.
But oh, you got it on your paper.
I do. See, right there. But I got scared. I'm like, I don't know if I wrote it down right. All right. Emily at freshroadmedia.com.
All right. If I had Sounders and a good soundboard, I'd play Sounders right now.
One more thing. You'd play Sounders right now and what?
For Right On Way Off. I thought that's where you're going.
No. We're not.
Oh.
I got more work for you boys to do.
Oh, okay? Wow.
Some heavy lifting, too, because I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about what's going on over in Israel.
Okay.
Big
so
doings.
We can't get into Right On
and
Way
I
off
know you two have been watching things pretty closely. So let's go there. Huge, you know, the country of Iran has now formally attacked a sovereign country of Israel. And so things are kind of in the making right now. There hasn't been a retaliation or anything as of yet that I know of, unless you guys do.
No.
But they're kind of big doings. Mike, tell me when you're watching this, what are your thoughts?
Well, obviously it's an escalation. I think, you know, whenever I think about Iran attacking Israel and, you know, Russia and Iran have been forming a closer and closer alliance over the past decade or two.
Mm-hmm.
Ezekiel 38 and 39 comes to mind, where Russia will lead a coalition with Iran and Turkey and Sudan and many of the Arab states, but not Saudi Arabia, oddly enough.
Yeah.
And I don't think Egypt. But nor Jordan. So in Ezekiel 38 and 39, that's the coalition that comes together.
Yep.
Is this kind of the forerunner of that?
I wondered.
And so, you know, that's what, you know, what I'm looking for, those kind of clues, I guess.
Yeah.
But and so there was one. Russia warned the United States that if we retaliated against Iran, they would retaliate.
Okay.
Against us and Israel.
Okay.
So that is interesting as far as biblical prophecy goes. The other thing that was interesting, two things, and I shouldn't be surprised at this, but I kind of am given the current administration, but we actually partnered with Israel to shoot down those missiles and drones.
Know. Thank you, Lord.
And we had jets in the air shooting that stuff down. Great job.
Yeah.
And I'll give credit where credit's due. You know, whoever was in charge of that at the Pentagon or whatever.
So thankful the administration did that.
So thank you, United States, for standing with Israel.
Yeah, limited as you did. Yeah.
And now there's an update.
Yeah.
We're not going to help them if there's a retaliation against Iran, which Israel is now meeting to decide, you know, how they're going to respond.
Yeah.
And so we'll see what the next step is and what escalation to look forward to. I mean, it's always, I mean, it's a mess.
I know.
And it's a little bit scary. The good news is, you know, those missiles and those drones did not get through. There were no fatalities.
A miracle of miracles, right? Yeah. Yes. They virtually eliminated all of them. I did hear there was one young boy that was injured, but I don't think there were any fatalities. I think they got most of them.
There might be fatalities in Syria and in Iraq because some of the old cruise missiles they sent didn't even make it.
Right, right.
They were falling short, short. And there's some talk that possibly Iran was doing that to kind of lull Israel into a false sense of security, thinking all their stuff is garbage, and that they they're keeping the real stuff for the next wave. While the attack itself was not devastating, the New York Times
reports
that it opened a volatile new chapter in the long-running shadow war between Iran and
Israel. Definitely, because we know that Iran is behind. You know, it's all monies are filtered through to other groups and so on. And so they've always been tied to it.
Did you know that Iran is 75 times larger than the Jewish state?
Yeah, I believe
its population is nearly 10 times larger. The two countries are more than 1,000 miles apart. And Israel has no intention of occupying Iranian land or subjecting its people.
Yeah.
Why then is Iran at war with Israel? That's the question I'd like to ask.
Why would you do that?
Why is it at war? Yeah. Well, Israel declared its independence in 1948. Mm-hmm. Iran was one of the first Muslim countries to recognize the new state. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah. However, when the Ayatollah Khomeini ousted Shah.
The Shah of Iran.
Yep.
Yeah.
It changed dramatically.
That was my junior high experience.
Was that going on
in
the
1979 Islamic Revolution. He severed all diplomatic and commercial ties with leadership. In our lifetime, never has a bigger story been leadership matters.
Yeah.
It's true.
About 30% of Iran is known to back the Ayatollah. The 70%, I think they don't. That just goes to show you it doesn't matter.
Right.
How many people want freedom in America if the leadership is able to circle the wagons and do what they're doing? It doesn't
matter. One just fills in for the other. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Then you got the little Satan and the great Satan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that discussion. I've got a bunch of research here we could go into, but I'm just gonna go to John 10:10.
Okay.
As they strive to enact their, you know, deluded vision of the future through violent means, Jesus had words that I think could apply to Iran.
Okay.
And deception fits them well. It said, "This is the judgment. The light has come into the world. People love the darkness rather than the light because their works were evil. For everyone who does wicked things hates the light and does not come into the light, lest his work should be exposed. But whoever does what is true comes to the light so that it may be clearly seen that his works have been carried out in God." And I'm sorry, that is John 3:19-21. John 10:10 is to give us life and give it more abundantly.
Right.
And so, you know, the temptation is, you know, for us to immediately, you know, say, just carpet bomb Iran, Israel, go for it, you know. But there's so many people, that 70%, there's so many innocent lives. I don't want them to temper their response. But what I am really struggling with is that, you know, every time I turn around, I get a little news alert on my phone. There's more protest groups in America shutting. They shut down the Golden Gate Bridge since we started recording.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Protesters for Hamas.
Yeah.
How can we get to over 60 to 65% of Americans that now believe Hamas is the oppressed people with what they did October 7th.
Well, give the age group of those Americans, because you gave that stat yesterday, but it's the younger folks, right?
It is the younger generation, because I think they don't know the history.
Right.
But when you go back to history, speaking of the uglification of a people group, look at the women living in countries like Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, Iran, how they, when they're forced to, like Chris said, when there's leadership change, Now they're wearing burkas. They're all in black. They're completely covered up. That's not their traditional dress at all.
Yeah.
And yet this uglification has an effect. It has a psychological effect on people. There is just no way of getting around it. There's a prime, another example of just that.
Well, I've been studying for my sermon, and I don't know if I was going to put this in there or not for this week. But, it you know, we're talking about falling into walking in the light, right?
Mm-hmm.
So here's some research from today. I don't know if I'm going to use this in the future or not. But when you talk about walking in the light, think about this. Abraham Lincoln died on this date in 1865. And if you could have warned the president before he went to Ford's Theater, would you have done so?
Mm.
The Titanic sank on this day in 1912.
Mm.
If you could have warned the passengers before they embarked on their ill-fated voyage, would you have done so?
Right.
Three people were killed and hundreds injured in the Boston Marathon bombing on this day in 2013.
Wow.
If you could have warned the people beforehand, would you have done so?
Yeah.
Jesus is still the light of the world. And this is from an article that I've been reading. It's fantastic. You know, John 8:12, and the brilliant Renaissance scholar Erasmus was right. This is his quote. Give light and darkness will disappear of itself. So then the question is,
nice.
Do we give the light? And how do we give the light?
Right. Darkness has to
you
flee.
You can't leave people in their sins and tell them, no, they're just fine.
Right.
And give light.
Yeah.
And in our culture, you can't call somebody out and say, hey, you're living a sinful life, you need to repent, because that's abrasive and that's offensive.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That is true. So, yeah, I mean, these biblical truths and realities, they apply to people regardless of your race, what your country of origin, where you live, what your culture is. It doesn't matter. God's truth, God's word is for all people in all regions for all time. And so
what about,
we can always depend on that.
What about the coincidence? Huh?
It's the coincidence.
I just happened to have this research handy. I didn't know you were going to do this without wanting to talk about Iran on the show. Mm. I had no, or in Israel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I totally did not. And look at that.
Yeah.
I know, out. Right?
Well, yeah. Yes. And you can throw April 19th in there as well. April 19th is probably a worse day with Ruby Ridge and then Waco and then the federal bombing in Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Is all April 19th. Yeah. So this is a bad week in history.
Is today April 15th?
Yeah, today's the 15th. So
it's tax day. So that's kind of bad for everybody.
Right. I mean, that's bad for everybody. And the other proposal I have, when you were talking about Iran, a couple things, you know, real quick. In the 70s, Iran was a modern nation under the Shah.
Women went to college.
Women went to college. They wore bell bottoms.
Yes.
And not burkas, bell bottoms. I mean, it was... You know, coffee shops, you know, everyone's, you know, it's the whole modern everything.
Exactly.
And then the Shah got deposed when I was in junior high. Mm-hmm. So my friends would yell down the hall, down with the Shah. It was a big joke. Anyway. So I had to live through that. And then, then we had the hostage crisis.
Yes.
And then Reagan's inaugurations when they let the hostages.
So
free.
What are we going to rename the show? The Ayatollah Emily and the Shah of Harlan.
We are not.
Down with the Shah.
Because I'm going to make you wear a burqa if you do that.
So I just want to throw
all your beautiful
and that
silk
would create
clothing.
More uglification.
I just wanted to throw all that in there. But here's my proposal.
Yeah.
Right. That we start referring to Iran as their full name, which is the Islamic Republic of Iran. That is who they are.
Yep.
That's who they identify themselves as.
Yep.
They are Persians, but spiritually they are Islamists and anti-Christ.
Very militant.
Yeah, very good. Well, absolutely. I tell you what, if I had a real soundboard, we can all pretend. I'm playing a sounder right now for Right On Way Off.
Right. Pray for Israel. That's what we're going to end.
Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. You're
pray
commanded.
For the peace of Jerusalem. Yeah. Pray for Israel. All right. So it's time for Right On Way Off. And we're going to start out with something that I think kind of applies to everything that we've been talking about today. And yes, Chris, in case you're wondering, I do have some lighthearted, empty-headed
Yay.
What do you call it?
Whimsy.
Whimsy. That's
whimsy.
Right.
Bring some
all
whimsy.
I could think of was amusement, and I knew that wasn't right. I got a little
flossy. I will also accept hijinks.
I will do like whimsy hijinks. If you take the serious, okay? Mm. All right.
Fair enough.
Let's start out with the first one. The very first one is this. The first statement is, the urge to save humanity, and save humanity's in quotes.
Okay.
The urge to save humanity is almost always only a false face for the urge to rule it. Is that right on? Or is that way off? What do you think, Chris? The urge to, quote, save humanity, end quote, is almost always only a false face for the urge to rule it.
The key phrase is almost always.
Okay.
And I'm going to go way off. I'm going to go way off.
Okay.
I don't think it's almost always. I think it's a lot.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of times people are using that as like a smokescreen.
Save humanity.
But I have been around enough human beings who are saved by Jesus who really would like to see humanity bettered, humanity saved from itself, to see orphans and widows taken care of. And so, sorry to spiritualize it so much, but there are many of those people that I've met and that I've tried to be where you do any of those things to help humanity and you don't want anything in return. In fact, you don't even want to know people. You don't even want people to know what you've done or how you've done it.
Okay.
And so I'm going to go way off for that one reason.
And
the statement that I said there, that's the caveat. The almost always is the caveat. Because I could easily go right on and make a case, but I'm going to go way off with the case I just made.
All right, Mike Shaw, what do you think? The urge to, quote, save humanity, end quote, is almost always only a false face for the urge to rule it.
So, I mean, that is right on. I don't know about the urge to, what was the first sentence? The urge to
save humanity.
So it's not the urge to save humanity. It's the facade of saving humanity with the knowing that you are using that to try to rule humanity.
Yeah.
There's so many examples. The global warming thing right now is the biggest, easiest one.
That's what popped into my
mind
right
That's
away.
Mike, it's easiest. Climate change now.
Yeah. You know why? Because we had a pause in warming.
Yeah.
The warming stopped. So it's like, oh, we have to change the wording.
Yeah.
So we'll just call it climate change. And then if it's hot,
other predictions failed.
That's climate change. If it's cold, that's climate change.
You know what you remember is climate change in the 70s where we're all going to be frozen by the year 2000.
Yeah, I do remember that.
You know? And, I mean, they just keep making
it. We got a whole bunch of hurricanes. That's climate change. Oh, there's no hurricanes this year.
Climate change.
So they can do what they want with it. And so it's they're doing it on purpose.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are other examples, but that's the biggest one right now.
All
right. And it's for our own good. And C.S. Lewis has talked about you know, that kind of fascism. Jonah Goldberg wrote a book. I think it was, I can't remember. It has a picture of a smiley face on it.
Yeah.
I think it's called Happy Fascism or Smiling Fascism, something like that. Because they come doing good.
Right.
C.S. Lewis talks about doing good.
Yeah.
But it's the worst oppression than hell, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what are we? Am I
right? Mike is correct. This is right on. Now, the person that said this is no Christian by any stretch of the imaginations. However, Mike, that's what I thought of too, right away. You know, two words, Greta Thunberg, you know,
and
Al Gore,
Thunberg.
You know, and it really is. I think it was Ronald Reagan who said the scariest words you'll ever hear is, hello, I'm from the government. I'm here to help you.
Yeah.
Right.
He also said they know so much that isn't so.
Yes. The problem with liberals is they just know so much that just isn't so.
So who made that quote?
H.L. Mencken. He was a journalist and a writer and a satirist, but his claim to fame is that he famously dubbed the Scopes trial. He dubbed that the monkey trial to eventually be called the Scopes monkey trial.
So he was kind of a high-fluent journalist, like a big-time journalist back in the day. Yeah.
He was covering it. He was using, you know, a lot of satire and, of course, in his satire and in his kind of making fun of the whole thing, called it the monkey trial. So I thought it was interesting, and I think it's very, very true. Next question, Mike, we'll start with you. Your beliefs don't make you a better person. Your behavior does. Your beliefs don't make you a better person. Your behavior does. Is that right on or is that way off?
Way off.
Okay.
It's way off because your behavior can't make you a better person until your beliefs do.
Yeah.
So it starts with your beliefs. If your beliefs aren't there, then your behavior is not going to be there.
Okay.
This is a true fact, mm-hmm. which is redundant. It's a joke. It's a joke way back. I mean, I was a sports guy.
A true fact.
A sports guy and I used to. One of our anchors said that once. And
let me be honest with you. Yeah. And the other times you're lying.
Yeah, now. Right. Exactly. So, it's a true fact that, what were we talking about?
Beliefs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beliefs versus behavior.
It's a true fact that you will behave the way you truly believe.
Yeah.
And so if you want to know what you really believe, look at the way you behave. Do you have faith? Are you acting like you have faith?
Mm-hmm.
If you're not, maybe you really don't have faith and you need to revisit that and build up your faith as an example.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm way off, because it does start with the belief before the behavior can actually make that true.
All right. Chris, what do you think? Is Mike right? Your beliefs don't make you a better person. Your behavior does. Mike said that was way off.
Yeah, I'm going to go right on. Why not? It's a talk show.
Yeah, you know. All right. Why is it way off?
Well, because your behaviors express your beliefs. It's the same thing, only coming at it from the other direction.
It's the chicken and the
egg. If you can believe whatever you want. You know, you can say whatever you want, believe whatever you want. Now, Neil T. Anderson is the quote that I have used for over a decade, maybe mm-hmm. 2 decades. And that is this. It's one of the most profound things for anybody who wants to walk with Jesus I've ever heard. It says this. He said this. He said, you will not always, human beings, you, the human, in the human condition,
mm-hmm.
people will not always live out what they profess.
Right.
But they will always live out what they believe.
Yep. There you go.
Yeah.
And so if your behavior is speaking the good, then your beliefs would have been in line. So mm-hmm. I can go, this, me and Mike are saying the same thing
from different directions.
But that's what makes it a talk show, and that's what makes it fun.
Exactly. Yep. Mike's right. You're wrong.
Man, I wish I had sound effects on this little rotten board.
Precisely for what he said. It starts in your mind. The Bible's clear. It's a battle for your mind.
Yeah.
It starts in the mind. And Martin Luther, in the Heidelberg Disputation, I know that you've read that, Chris.
Oh, you're getting all scholarly over there.
Yeah, he puts it this way, and I think this is really interesting. He says, the law says do this, and it is never done. Grace says believe in this, and everything is already done. So I think he really eloquently put it that you need to focus on what you believe, why you believe it. Do you really believe it? Because your actions will be dictated by your belief system. Absolutely.
Take every thought captive to Christ.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't ever say, be a better person. You gotta be a better person.
Well, the better person
pull
part will come
up. It's like what Chris said
yesterday in the sermon. He's like, get Christ inside of you.
Exactly.
It'll come out eventually.
And the people that love
and then
me.
Discernment can be your guide.
The people that believe me love me, and the people that love me do what? They obey me. Their actions will follow what they really believe.
The big scriptural point that we even heard somebody re-quote, like, you know, is that the Bible doesn't say you build your life on the rock and that Jesus is the rock. That's not what it says.
Nope.
It says those who hear my words and do them.
Obey him.
That's the rock.
Yeah.
That's the rock. That's the rock you're building.
You're building your house on.
And that's why
foundation.
Chris was right, because actually doing them is what manifests in the world. And so you can't.
You show me your faith, I'll show you my works.
Yeah, right.
Right. Yeah. But
so we're all right.
But either way,
no,
Martin Luther,
Chris is
you,
wrong.
C.S. Lewis, y'all got together. I'm wrong. You're right. Let's move on.
Let's move on. All right. Okay. Last one. I'm pulling out the hijinks. Peanut butter, creamy or chunky? Chunky's better. Is that right on or way off?
That's
Chris?
Way off.
Why?
Because it wrecks the bread.
How does it wreck the bread?
All those little chunky pieces tearing up the bread when you're going with the knife.
What are you doing with the knife?
I'm putting creamy peanut butter on my bread is what I'm doing with the knife.
Okay.
So I'm way off.
You're way off on that one. All right, Mike Shaw. Is peanut butter on your list of accepted foods, by the way?
It's a right protein. Now, I'm eating everything right now.
Oh, okay. Well,
he left the cult.
I left the cult, at least temporarily. Maybe permanently. I don't know.
All right. Peanut butter, creamy or chunky? Chunky is better. Is that
decide.
Right on or is that
decide.
Way off?
I can't decide. I like them both so much. So it's way off because I can't decide. They're both great.
Okay.
And it depends on what I'm in the mood for or what's available. And I've got a solution for you, Chris. What you do is you put down a big, thick layer of butter first.
Yeah.
And then you can put down your chunky peanut butter. And then on the other side, you can put in Miracle Whip. Slice up some bananas.
Oh, bananas are good.
And make yourself a Elvis Presley peanut butter and Miracle Whip sandwich with bananas.
Or toast the bread.
Right. Or toast the bread. Or, you know, just be more gentle.
Yeah,
you
have to just put it calm on, down, dude. It's peanut butter.
Put it on. Okay. You got to put it on a little thicker.
What is the right chunky. What is the right answer,
the
old
right
sensei?
The right answer is chunky is better.
Yeah. I got a right on way off question for you guys.
Oh, great. Right.
Oh, great. Okay. Cool.
So you know you're both wrong. Mike was a little bit more
steak
right.
Steak and potato. Steak and potato together,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Baked potatoes are awesome, but if you really want to have the ultimate meal, that'll be a baked sweet potato. Is that right on or way off? Emily?
Way off.
You want the regular russet potato?
Well, not necessarily russet.
Well, you want the
baker?
But
they're good bakers, yeah.
Yeah, you want the baker over there, don't you know? Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, for years we grew up with the steak and potatoes, steak and potatoes. How often was it a sweet potato? Never. Except for Thanksgiving, when they had to cover it with a whole bunch of like marshmallows and sugar and all that stuff.
I do like
sweet potatoes, but on a regular, consistent basis.
Steak and potato means it has to be.
It's a regular, red potatoes are my favorite.
Okay, fine. Emily's way off. Here's the statement. If you're going to do steak and potato, a baked potato is fine, but if you really want to go all out, you got to have a sweet potato. Mikey, you're right on or way off?
I'm way off on that. I like all kinds of potatoes.
Okay.
And you know what's really cool are the small potatoes.
Yes.
And you can chunk them up and put like garlic salt on them and butter and bake those.
Just roast them.
Roast them like that. Or, you know, I don't know how many baked potatoes I eat, the regular kind.
Yeah.
With just too much butter, too much sour cream.
I know. Yeah. I pile it on.
Bacon.
Okay. So let me just, you know,
and you can't
settle
make lefse. You can't make lefse out of the sweet potatoes.
Let me just settle this. Let me just settle this. If you are going to have steak and potatoes, it's always nice to have a baked potato. But if you really want to go all out, you got to have a sweet potato. That is right on. You're both wrong. Sweet potatoes are the best.
It's my show. You're wrong.
Oh, my goodness.
Sweet potatoes are the best with steak. And I make it what's called the garlic squeege. I got a little cast iron garlic baker thing. You put garlic cloves full in there.
Do they have those on Amazon?
And it roasts. Probably. It roasts and bakes with the sweet potatoes. And then when you come it out, you cut it, and you have a hot pad on, and you just kind of squeeze the garlic into the sweet potato.
Wait, can you cook
Nothing
it?
Beats that. Yes. Nothing beats that.
And then your
that.
Wife comes and cleans up after.
We got to wrap the show up because I'm hungry. I got to go.
Can you cook it with a regular potato, though?
You could. You totally could.
Okay.
Yeah, you can put anything in. Yeah, it wouldn't be the same.
Sweet potatoes are better. You're both wrong.
This has been a long show. I think it's bedtime. So we're going to close it out. Any final thoughts that either one of you want to leave with us today at all?
I would like to have people go to freshroadmedia.com. Mike and Emily are like volunteer missionaries here. I'm pastoring the church. I'm fine, but we sure would like to get some resources for a new soundboard and for them to have hope of a future of continuing to do this kind of work. Freshroadmedia.com. A gift of any amount would really go a long way. Somebody says, well, do you really want me to send the $20? Yeah. Yeah, anything. Just,
we'd appreciate
just
it.
Just hearing a new name and a new face that listens to the show, that likes the show, would go a long way. Also, Salvaged by God. That is my teaching platform, and I am so amazed that God is doing stuff with my meager little efforts on my little sermons, my little messages, and it's touching people. And thank you in advance for everything. God
all
bless
right.
you. Appreciate it.
Mike, anything you want to share at all?
Total eclipse over America 7 days ago. We have 33 days left. Gird your loins.
All right.
Yes.
Right. Hashtag just saying.
All right. And with that, I'm just going to steal from Mike. I'm going to say go and do likewise. Yes. And we'll meet you back here next week with No Apology with Emily and Chris.